everyone. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Letters and Layers podcast. Welcome to any new listeners. This is your host, Amaka. It is Tuesday morning, the 30th, when I am recording, and it is great to be back after taking almost a month off from the podcast. Over the past few weeks, I've been able to take just a little bit more time for myself. I went on my birthday trip to Panama, which was amazing. Got back, had some guests come for a weekend, which was a little bit impromptu, but still worked out. Got to spend some time with them, take them around the city, and, you know, just connect more with the people in my world. And still feel like I'm kind of getting back into the swing of things. Last week, after coming back from my trip, I came back on the 20th and then kind of went into host mode with my guests. And then after they left, it was me having to face, work and start building the momentum there since I had been away for over a week. And I only just started feeling like things are slowing down and getting to a more manageable pace this weekend. So it was still kind of a working weekend for me because, you know, just trying to catch up on things that needed attention while I was away. And I am starting to feel like I'm getting caught up. I'm not completely there, but I'm getting caught up. And I'm really, really thankful that I was able to take this trip. Birthdays for me are really important. I'm very reflective. I think a lot about my life. Think about how far I've come. Think about where I want to go. Because, you know, it's like your personal new year. It is the day that you came earthside. So I know people have different relationships with their birthday, but it's a big deal for me. And I turned 35 this year, so that added another layer to what it meant ultimately. And I didn't want to just kind of let it pass. You know, I wanted to celebrate it. I wanted to commemorate it. I didn't want to depend on anyone outside of me to make it special. And I will remember the birthday fondly. Like I said, everyone has different relationships to birthdays. And I think that's a lesson that I'm still learning, because the energy I put forth for other people's birthdays sometimes is not reciprocated. And it can, you know, I feel silly sometimes, you know, if I feel like a pang of sadness if I didn't hear from someone on that day. But that's something I had to reflect on a little bit this year too. You know, everyone's relationship is different, and you kind of have to act with that information accordingly. But for me, birthdays, especially if you're someone in my life who I love and have impacted me in a positive and profound way, the fact that you were born and I was born and our life direction and trajectory has been so that our paths have crossed, you know, and we have influenced each other in one way or another. And I am in awe of you as a person and, you know, just love you so much. I'm going to want to celebrate you, you know, I'm going to want to make that day special. But you know, I guess not everyone feels as strongly about birthdays as I do, and I have to figure out how to properly channel that energy depending on who it is, to be quite frank. So yeah, that was just something I was thinking about. But as far as the trip goes, I treated myself to a business class flight to Panama, direct from Chicago, which was great. It was 5.5 hours. So I left like mid-afternoon and got to Panama around 8:30. Or maybe left like early afternoon, got to Panama around 8:30. And was at my hotel by maybe 10-ish. I booked at the Waldorf Astoria in Panama City, which was not as expensive as it may sound. So, you know, I definitely sought to treat myself on this trip, but all in all, I think it was a pretty affordable trip. So I spent the night there, my first night, and then the next morning, I flew to Bocas del Toro, which is an island about 50 minutes flight from Panama City, and that's where I spent the next 3 days. Booked a really nice hotel, oceanfront view, was able to do some island hopping on my birthday, spoke to locals, spoke to other tourists, got to eat some really great food that was, I would say, probably worth more than it cost. I did not have a bad meal. I didn't have anything bad in Panama. Everything is so fresh. I had this interaction with an empanada store owner who is rated like 5 stars online, and I left the hotel. She's like a 2-minute walk, and she was like, "Are you coming for empanadas?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "I'm actually about to close, but come in, I'll make them for you." And I was like, "No, it's totally okay. I can come back tomorrow." But she insisted. So I thought that was really sweet. She told me her empanada flavors for the day. I told her I'll take one of each. She gave me like 3 flavors. I told her I'd take one of each. And then she had some homemade treats that I also bought from her. Everything came out to like $12. And I gave her $20. I was like, "Keep the change." And she was like, "Thank you." Like, with the quality of food, that's just one example. But like, I feel like the quality of food was much higher than what you would expect it to cost. So if you're looking for somewhere that is pretty reasonable as far as price goes with food and everything like that, I would definitely recommend it. Bocas del Toro is still a very local town. Like, there were tourists, people were coming and going, but it's still very much the locals that come and live and work and move around and engage with their community. Although I did notice that there's like some construction here and there. So I'm curious what that oceanfront town will look like in maybe 5 years or 10 years. But yeah, I set out for my 35th to just wake up in a nice hotel that faced the ocean so that I could journal my thoughts in that morning and pray and just express gratitude and thanks for turning 35. And that's what I got. I woke up on my birthday. I opened the balcony doors. I sat down. I wrote everything I wanted to write, everything that I was feeling, looking out at the ocean, and it felt amazing. And then I took some pictures of myself because I kind of wanted to capture this moment. So I made sure to bring my tripod. I attached my phone. I took some pictures. I liked some. Some of them were okay, but I got a couple that I was like, "Oh, okay. I will look back at these photos and remember this trip and remember it fondly." So yeah, I spent some time just lounging in the hotel, which honestly sometimes feels enough of a vacation for me. I'm the type of person where like I don't necessarily have to be out and about doing activity after activity, excursion after excursion. Like, sometimes I just need to change my environment. I need to change what I'm looking at. So I could have probably been in the hotel for all the 3 days, but that I did not want that. So I did some walking around, exploring the town. On my birthday, I did an island hopping excursion, got on a boat with some other tourists, and, you know, we just hopped over a couple of islands that had small towns that were very popular with tourists, that had beautiful beaches and shorelines. And I was just really grateful in those moments to be able to do this for myself. And I really encourage, if you're able to, you know, take trips for yourself, do them by yourself. Don't be afraid to travel solo. I learned pretty early on in my 20s that people love the idea of travel. And if you're lucky, you might have one or two people take trips with you. But I had to get over being nervous or afraid of taking trips by myself because, you know, you get older, people get busier, it's harder to align schedules, and you may miss out on opportunities to see things you wouldn't be able to see otherwise because you're afraid of going by yourself. For me, all it means is you just have to do a little bit more research. You just have to do a little bit more legwork. Tap into online groups that promote solo travel, especially as like Black people and Black women. Those groups are out there. The resources are out there. And you can have the time of your life being in a foreign country by yourself. I am a living testament to that. This trip to Panama was my second trip by myself there. And then I have been to Amsterdam by myself. I took a 10-day trip early 2020 before COVID shut everything down. That was also a very memorable trip. I have photos that I look at and just am proud that I did it, you know? I've taken trips with friends and they've been amazing. But I think it almost feels like a superpower to be able to pick a place and do the research and build an itinerary and buy the ticket, book the hotel, and go. Like, there's nothing stopping you. And then you have those experiences and memories forever. And once you finally conquer it for the first time, you're literally unstoppable. You know, you can literally go anywhere as long as it's safe. Like, you have to do your research. I went to Panama because I did my research and it looked like a beautiful place. It was safe for solo travelers. Amsterdam, same thing. So you have to do your research. I'm not going to tell you to go somewhere that's not safe, but there are so many places you can go to by yourself and have a life-changing experience. So I am going to be the first one. If you are thinking of taking a solo trip, if you've tried to plan trips with friends and they've always fallen through, I'm going to be the first one to encourage you to take that trip by yourself, build an itinerary. Maybe you won't go for as long as you would have gone with people, but you can have an amazing trip in 2-3 days, you know? And then you are able to build that muscle, build that confidence of being able to travel by yourself. And there's nothing like knowing, no matter what happens, if things don't work out with other people, you can go by yourself and you know how to make that trip worthwhile, and you know that you're gonna look back on it and be thankful that you went. So I say all that to say I had a great time. I'm already thinking about where I'm gonna go next. I talked about my trip to Portugal some months back. I actually wanna go back. I'm trying to see if I can hit Lisbon again and Porto this time. Next year, I find that I'm starting to create a pattern of going on an international trip in the beginning of the year and then in the middle of the year. And I really like that. So I think I'm going to continue it. So I'm shooting for my next international trip to be in January. And I think, like I said, I'm probably going to go to Lisbon again and then add Porto to the trip And I've already told my friends who went with me last time and they are interested. So we'll see what happens. But yes, if you're thinking of traveling solo, please do it. Just make sure you do your research and you're safe about it. But you will not regret it. You won't regret it. So yes, spent the 3 days in Bocas del Toro, had an amazing time. My third day there, I flew back to Panama City, stayed again at the Waldorf Astoria. And then the next day, my flight left at around 6 to 7 p.m. So I still had the whole day. I went to the Panama Canal, which was my second time. I also went during my first solo trip there. This time, things are a little bit different. They have built extensions of the canal, so that was cool to see. And they offer an IMAX like informational film that's narrated by Morgan Freeman that gives you the history of the canal and everything that has happened with it up until present day. And it's a 3D feature too, so that was cool. And it just added to the experience of going to the canal and seeing it again. I went to this fish market called Mercado de Mariscos. I went there last time I went. Had the most amazing fried red snapper ever. And all while paying a lot less than you would think. And I'm so glad I went. And I hear that, you know, people are thinking, you know, more people are considering moving out of the United States, seeing what's out there. People are considering Panama. I totally get why. It's easy to move around. Ubers are cheap. Food is reasonably priced. Nightlife is good, even though I didn't really tap into that this time around. And there are things to do. It's a very rich country, rich in culture. So yeah, I'm going to sing its praises forever and ever. But ultimately, that's how I spent my birthday. And being able to do this also gives me a feeling of, kind of re-inspires me and re-motivates me for the rest of the year. My birthday is not exactly in the middle of the year, but it is in the middle-ish to where like I can divide the year before my birthday and after my birthday. And kind of taking this break and pause and having this definitive moment of stopping and reflecting and thinking about where I was and where I am and where I want to go allows me to kind of come back into my daily life and routine with some renewed vigor and momentum to take me through the end of the year. So I also appreciate the trip for that too. So that is it as far as, you know, how the past few weeks have gone for me. And I think I'm going to move on and talk about couples therapy. So on my last, not the last episode, the episode before that, because the last episode I gave my review on Inside Out, which if you have not seen it, you need to go and see it. That movie is amazing. I was actually considering seeing it for a third time, maybe this weekend. We'll see. But yes, the episode before last, I spoke about the show Couples Therapy on Showtime. I talked about the couples on the show. I talked about the therapist, Orna Gorolnik, and I want to continue that conversation. So as far as episode 4 to 6 goes, speaking specifically about Rex and Joey, I think that the religious trauma, particularly that Joey has experienced at the hands of her mom, you can see how that is impacting how she interacts with Rex, and you can see that it is impacting their ability to be intimate with each other and kind of let loose and be comfortable in that way. And I know that that can definitely be something that folks with very strict, almost extreme or fanatical religious backgrounds struggle with. Because sex is portrayed as something that is dirty and is wrong and is evil in some ways. And then how do you go from being brought up in that to now releasing yourself and reframing how you see sex. So I could understand what her struggles were, what her hangups were. Although she did mention that before they got together, before her and Rex were official, they were actually pretty free with that. Like, they were sleeping together. It wasn't an issue. But when they got serious, she kind of retreated. And she mentioned that she thinks that she was in a period of rebellion from her upbringing. But now, in being more serious about it for herself, it's almost like she can't reconcile. I don't know if reconcile is the right word, but she can't hold the two truths that it's okay to be free and to have sex with her husband and still have a relationship with God. And I think that's something, I don't think that she's alone. I think that a lot of people who are brought up in very religious environments where sex is demonized pretty much by elders and caregivers and whoever, in their attempt to keep you from engaging in that behavior when you're young, do you a disservice when you are older and you are in a position to explore that and you don't know how to break free from that. And then it can stifle you from being able to have a beautiful, carefree, stable relationship with the idea of sex and with the act of sex. And it does a disservice. It does a disservice because you are beaten over the head with the messages when you're younger that sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad. And then when you are old enough to understand it, you are left alone and not able to untangle your perspective around sex from your current reality, which is maybe you're in a stable relationship, maybe you're married, maybe the environment around you is to where you can finally explore this in a healthy way, and you don't have the tools. So it's interesting to see her navigate through that. And, you know, as much as her relationship with God has helped her to this point, she is struggling in that way. And I don't blame her for this struggle, because a lot of people do. And I feel also bad for Rex, who loves her so much and has had to bear the brunt of the actions perpetrated by her mother, because he did not grow up in the Christian faith, or, you know, their ideals did not initially align, which I think he's making more of a concerted effort to do that now, because he goes to church with her, he prays with her. So it's interesting how religion, and in this particular context, Christianity, plays a role in their relationship, to where they are both struggling and trying to fight trauma that they have sustained from both of their sides. You know, he's struggling with trauma around his relationship with his father, and that's partially why he is struggling with the idea of having children, because he doesn't want to be an absent dad, because he doesn't remember his dad being present. And when his dad was present, he remembers negative experiences. Joey is struggling more so with the religious trauma around what she saw and how she was brought up with her mom. Moving on to Casimir and Alexis. There was a point where I was almost like tearing up for them, because they have been through unspeakable trauma in ways that you're just like, human beings are monsters. You know, Alexis has struggled with overcoming sexual trauma, which I spoke about in the last couples therapy episode. And then in these next three episodes, Casimir is talking more about his housing uncertainty growing up and the domestic violence he witnessed with his mom. And I'm not sure if it was his dad or his mom's partner. So he has also built up the ability to dissociate from that and distract himself, particularly when he was younger, distract himself from his immediate surroundings and what was going on. He would, you know, focus on things he could do, you know, dancing and singing and just trying to keep his spirits lifted up, because if he let reality set in, he didn't know what that would do for him or what that would do to him. So now you have these two people who are coming from places of instability in different ways and who have been violated in different ways and have sustained trauma in different ways and have come together and offer different things to each other in positive ways, but also how their trauma clashes does not allow them to move forward in some ways. One specific example I'm thinking about is when Casimir was providing his roller coaster analogy about how there are people who sustain trauma, but are aware that everyone is not going through what they go through. So like if they go on a roller coaster and it's a traumatic experience, they're not preventing other people from going on roller coasters because it's not everyone that goes through that. But then there is another situation where someone might go on a roller coaster and they have a traumatic experience and then they're like, no one can go on that roller coaster. And he was trying to use that analogy to kind of explain his understanding of trauma. And then Alexis took it as a slight against him. And when I was watching that episode, I was like, Alexis, that's not what's happening. And it's interesting, too, how Casimir felt the need to preface that this wasn't about him before he provided that analogy. But still, he took it personally. So I think that was kind of like a visual example of how Alexis's trauma was kind of showing itself, because he wasn't able to separate the fact that Casimir was just trying to explain how he understood what was going on. And this is part of why they, you know, butt heads. Like they have the parts of their relationship that are in harmony and they're able to get along. But when things come to a head, it's almost like they're about to break up, you know, and they hurt each other so bad that they feel like they can't come back from it. And I really took to heart when Casimir started to cry and he was like, I don't know that I can love you through this trauma. And I was just like, I wonder if he almost feels responsible for helping Alexis through it. But trauma that people sustain is such a personal thing. If you are not their therapist or their counselor or whoever, you cannot take it upon yourself to help someone heal from their trauma. You can't do it, especially if you are dealing with shit yourself. So I don't know if he almost took it upon himself to kind of play this role and now is finding that he can't do it. But yeah, I can see that he was having that realization, and it was sad to witness, you know. You can tell that they really love each other, but I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to break up, but I think a lot will depend on how much they are each healed from what they've gone through in the past and, you know, if they're actually able to resolve within them and come to terms however best they can with what happened to them in the past before they can truly, truly move forward as a unit. As far as Eliana and Mitch goes, you can see how they are both, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but I see a power struggle between the two of them, and I see how that is also rooted in trauma, because Eliana had been raped when she was 14 and, you know, was kind of like banished or excommunicated from the church because it was a church member that raped her. So she also has not only inconsistent or unsteady relationship with sex, but she struggles with being vulnerable, and she in general, and then she struggles being vulnerable with Mitch. And then Mitch also struggles with vulnerability from his past, but also in their relationship, in his relationship with Eliana, because he mentions that the specific instances where he has chosen to be vulnerable, it was not received in the way that he felt supported. He talks specifically about a friend who passed away, and he was visibly distraught about it. And the way she kind of was just like, oh, let me know if you have slept with this woman. I don't want to look stupid, type of thing. Like, she didn't really give him space to express how he felt in front of her. If anything, he kind of clammed up, became closed off, was like, what is wrong with you? Like, how can you talk to me like this about someone who I had absolutely no, you know, romantic connection with, who was just a good friend? She did apologize, but I think that also kind of shows how her struggles with trust and with trauma unresolved shows itself, or, you know, informs how she interacts with him. I also think that their dynamic as far as division of labor is exacerbated with her OCD diagnosis, because in her mind, there is one way and it's her way. And if it is not done in her way, then there's an issue. So she doesn't give Mitch the space to kind of do things the way he sees is good for him. And, you know, that definitely impacts how he interacts with her, what he does around the house. I think he also has some reflection to do in this regard, because he grew up with his mom doing most of the labor. He mentions that he would just appreciate if everyone kind of picked up for themselves in their apartment. But then Eliana talks about how she has seen when he's at his family's home, his mom does most of the work. So I think it was a good idea for Orna to tell them ultimately to stay with each other for at least a week, because you won't really be able to figure out how to improve the dynamic as far as division of labor goes if you guys are not together. And, you know, I can see that they want to be together, they want to make it work, but like I said, the overarching theme for me in these last three episodes, these middle three episodes, was if you don't resolve the issues that you have before entering a new relationship, they're going to rear their ugly heads. It's going to rear its ugly head. Like, you can't avoid it. I also see this too with Aaron and Lorena and Josh. Josh talked about the experience he had with pretty much being involved in a forest fire when he was in college or something. And pretty much he tried to take primary responsibility for it, but was punished in the process. And a lot of people don't talk to him anymore about it. And he has struggled with immense blame around it. And that kind of informs how he is so black and white, and how he leaves no room for his partners to, you know, there's no gray area with him. If he feels slighted, if he feels that he's been done wrong because of how he has experienced fault and blame in his past, that also informs his interactions with Aaron and Lorena, which also, I think, contributes to why Aaron has not felt that she can be completely herself with Josh, because she mentioned that for the first like 6 or so years of their relationship, she never really told him when she was bothered by something, because she did not think that he could handle those kind of conversations. And also, that's also been an issue for Lorena too, because he is very quick and very open to share how he has felt wronged by her, but then has a harder time seeing his missteps when it comes to his interactions with Lorena. I think with them, they have challenges with dynamic, period, as far as, and this is kind of why I struggle with understanding how polyamorous relationships can be successful, because I don't know or see that it can be equal. Because Lorena was talking about how she felt like she had to get permission in certain ways from Aaron to spend time with Josh. And clearly to me, as far as the depth of each relationship and the priority of each relationship, those definitions are still blurred. And I don't know. I feel like I'm out of my scope. I'm really trying to express my understanding of these three in a unit. But if anything, it just kind of confirms to me that this is not something I would be able to do, because the roles that each person plays is not concrete. And I think they are struggling with that themselves. Initially, it was Josh and Aaron, and then Josh met Lorena, and Lorena and Aaron are not together. So I think I'm just going to leave it at, they're going to have to better define where each person stands, because I think that's Lorena's main challenge. She is struggling to understand clearly how her relationship with Josh fits in the overarching dynamic between the three of them. I hope this makes sense. But yeah, I would definitely say, if you are interested, please watch the show for yourself. I think there's a lot to learn as someone who is single and someone who is in a relationship or married. I think Orna is a fantastic couples therapist, and I am looking forward to watching the last three episodes and seeing how everything is kind of tied together. And yeah, I'm going to end the podcast here. Thank you guys so much. We are approaching our 3-year anniversary, which is, I don't want to think too much about it because I might start crying. September 1st, 2021 is when I posted my first episode. And I can't believe we are about to hit our 3-year anniversary. So for those who have been listening from the beginning, thank you so much. For those who have found me along the way, for those who have just found me, maybe this is your first episode, thank you so much for pressing play, for giving me a listen, for spending time with me. Please reach out to me, email me, contact@theLettersAndLayers.com. reach out to me via Instagram at @amaka_ag. Please visit my website, mylettersandlayers.com. That's where I put podcast information, transcripts, blogs, what have you. I hope to put out a newsletter at some point. I want to first build a list. And if you're interested, please sign up. Please share, please recommend the podcast to those who you think will be interested or positively impacted by what I talk about. And as always, thank you guys again. I appreciate you all, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.